Hey, I'm Michaela LaFrac, the host of Vermont Edition. The podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening.
During the pandemic, people looked for connection in all sorts of different ways. Talking over the fence to their neighbors, social distance dining, Zoom hangouts. Thomas Christopher Green sat on his porch and he watched the world. And he wrote down stories, too. They're now collected in his nonfiction debut, a book called Notes from the Porch, Tiny True Stories to Make You Feel Better About the World. He's also the author of 6 novels, including the international bestseller, The Headmaster's Wife. He's the founder of the Vermont College of Fine Arts, where he served as president for 13 years. And he is now the owner of Hugo's Bar and Grill in Montpelier. Notes from the Porch came out in February. Tom, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
We're so glad to have you. I really loved your book. I devoured it in one sitting. Now, you're clearly an outgoing person in many ways. You are the president of VCFA. You've done many, many book tours and signings. You own a bar and restaurant now. But in 2020, everyone's worlds narrowed so dramatically because of the pandemic. What was that lifestyle shift like for you?
Well, I think it was great for introverts. It was hard for me.
Yeah.
I think everybody else who was used to being out and about. I mean, I had... my world really shrunk during that period of quarantine to, you know, an hour or two a day with my daughter and her mom who live a block away. And otherwise, it was just me, as you said, on my porch. I was working on a novel. But the world kind of came to me, too, because here in Montpelier, anyway, we're very much a front porch culture. And so while we couldn't be near each other, people sort of took to the streets. Time slowed down. Life was different. In a way that had a silver lining of beauty, despite how dark that time was.
Mm. Tom, you write that these stories, that you told these stories on social media during the pandemic as a way to kind of bridge those physical divides and feel a little bit less alone. How exactly did you go about sharing them?
Well, you know, this is probably the only book, or maybe there's others that I don't know of, that was written entirely with one finger on an iPhone. I would work on my novel during the day. I would, you know, we all had our routines then. And at night, I just started telling stories to people who follow me on social media, at Thomas Christopher Green. And the response to them was really remarkable. And I wanted to do something. The little thing I could do, I'm a storyteller, and there were great heroes happening, the first responders, nurses, doctors, in this really challenging time of COVID. And the one little gift I had was the ability to tell a story that may make someone's day a little brighter. And so I set out to do that as sort of a slight pandemic project. And it eventually evolved into the idea that I should put it into a collection and get it out into the world because the response was so strong to them.
Mm. Well, Tom, I have to share on this topic of weaving people together through stories. One of the stories in your book talks about you going to a bar in Manhattan called The Dead Poet, where you got free drinks because you named a bunch of Irish writers just by looking at their pictures. And I was shocked when I was reading that because I actually went to that bar a few months ago during a very rare trip to New York. Our friend in Manhattan brought us there, and we tried to get in for happy hour, but it was absolutely packed. And I just thought, while reading that, like, what are the chances? And it made me feel closer to you, even though we've never met in person.
That's amazing. And that's one of the great things about telling stories in sense of place, right? Because that is a little bar. It's a real place. It's on Amsterdam Ave, just slightly north of 79th Street. And when I was at the college, I spent a lot of time in New York. And so that was a place that was right near the hotel I stayed at. And yes, The Dead Poet, it's got all these lists of photos of Irish poets. And I surprised the bartender by being able to name them all, because if you can do that, your drinks are free. And he told me, I can't tell if you're a liar or a cheat. And at the end of the story, it explains why I was actually able to name them all, which is a rich personal story of my own.
Well, Tom, I'm not calling you a liar here, but there were some stories where I was wondering if you were towing the line between fact and fiction, because they were so remarkable, including one about a man named Clyde who lived in an old farmhouse on Mirror Lake. Could you tell us the story of Clyde, and please tell me if it's true or not?
Oh, that's entirely true. So a long time ago, when I first moved to Vermont, I was living in Calais, Vermont, and I heard that old Clyde Daly, who lived up on Mirror Lake, which locals know as number 10 Pond, who was 96 years old might be interested in selling his house. And so I went and met with him and approached him about doing it. He lived like an absolute pauper. I mean, this place was crazy. He was a hoarder. Stuff was everywhere. It was the middle of winter, but he was wearing six coats and he had one little wood stove and these rickety windows. But the house had these great bones and looked down toward Mirror Lake. He eventually called me and told me, or his lawyer called me, told me he'd be willing to sell me the house. And I was young and broke and graduate student, had no money. And he would give me the mortgage himself, which he did. But I had to take the house with all his things in it. And because, you know, at this point in his life, he did not want to move with anything. So I did. And so my girlfriend and I at the time who bought the house, we spent the first month just cleaning through all his endless and endless stuff. Well, there were all these photos in there of him and another man. Just over and over again. And through those photos and through stories from neighbors, I began to piece together his history. And people in Central Vermont older than me or been around longer than me might remember part of this, but Clyde Daly and Norm Bryant were business partners who owned Bryant Daly Hardware in Barrie. What people didn't know was they were also partners in life. And they had lived in this house starting in the 1930s and until I bought it in 1998 or 1999. And I bought it right after Norman died. And shortly after Clyde died, he died of a broken heart. And, you know, the times were different then. And I thought strongly about that house had good bones because there was a lot of love in it. And, you know, back in the 1940s and 50s, people, you know, probably thought about the two bachelors on the hill, but they left them alone. You know, the world had a bigotry that wouldn't allow them to be themselves. But up there on that little knoll on top of the lake, they were. And it's a beautiful house and it's still there. And another writer now lives there. I don't live there anymore, but it's a great place.
And you also wrote about how Clyde had a little bit more savings than he might have led on to.
That's right. Clyde, like I said, Clyde lived like a pauper. When he died with $20 million that he left all to his church. And what he had done, the way he made his money was that starting in the 1940s and 50s in Calais, anytime a house came up for sale, he would buy it. So his money was all in property, but he owned all these houses all surrounding Number 10 Pond and that part of Calais and North Calais Village. And Clyde Daly owned all those properties and he died with $20 million, even though he lived like he was, couldn't pay the heat.
Wow. Well, it's an absolutely incredible story in a book chock full of them. One portion really stuck with me, Tom, and in one story, you compared the pandemic to grief, how it was always there, even in the little moments of grace that we could find, and mm-hmm. It was only really curable by time. And there are two stories included in this book about your daughter, Jane, one towards the beginning and one towards the very end. And you write that Jane was born many months premature, and she died at just 6 months old. When you had to slow down during the pandemic, did you mm-hmm. find yourself thinking about Jane in a new way or feeling your grief differently than you had before?
Well, I think it gave me the courage to write about her, which I'd never done. I mean, I did do it in my novel, The Headmaster's Wife, which you referenced earlier.
Yeah.
But I did it through fiction and I changed characters. And fiction has the power to sort of obfuscate things so that the hard truths are kind of at a remove. You can still get to some of the same feelings and emotion. I think that's why that book resonated with people, was there was a lot of grief into that book. But here is the first time I've ever written in a direct and very public way about losing her and the challenge of that. And the people have asked me, was it hard to put it out there? And the answer to that is no. I think a lot of people were moved by that story. It wasn't hard to put out there. It was incredibly hard to write. I mean, I wrote it with tears in my eyes the entire time, but I got through it. And I hope it resonates with people who have had a similar experience. It's not a club people want to be part of, having lost a child, but you also really learn from that experience in a way that makes you a deeper and more well-rounded human being. And I hope that comes out in the book.
And the way that you wrote about it, to me, felt particularly powerful because you talk not just about your daughter, but the community of people that surrounded you and your ex-wife and your other daughter during that time and after Jane's death. You talked about the postcards that people sent you from all around the world connecting with you.
Yeah, I mean, that was the most remarkable thing, you know, is that this one little life could have such an effect. My ex-wife, ran a blog during Jane's life to update really friends and family about her day-to-day experience, because it was a roller coaster when you're in the hospital NICU with a baby like that, first at Dartmouth and then in Boston. And what was really remarkable is at the end of Jane's life, my wife had 6,000 readers a day, which any writer would love to have. And the last thing she did was when Jane died and she shut down the blog, she asked her readers to send postcards to our house that said Jane was here, which was from Dr. Seuss book, Horton Hears a Who, a person to person, no matter how small, and the Who say we are here. Well, they started to come and from all over the world. And soon we had them from all 50 states. And then we had them from countries all over Europe. And by the end of a year, we had postcards, and not just postcards, but quilts, drawings, poems from all over the world, all six continents except for Antarctica, which you wouldn't expect to get anything from. But then on the anniversary of her death, a postcard came from the Antarctic Science Station, which was really amazing. All the scientists with holding up signs in the snow with their snow costumes on that said, Jane was here. And it felt like something really was complete at that point.
Mm. Incredible. How did it feel when this book came out with these really precious stories in it?
I think it's been fun because the response has been great. And just to let people know, there's some stories about grief in here, but there's some stories that are very funny. And I think that the book has, small pieces of life. When I did my book launch here in Montpelier, my entire neighborhood showed up at the book launch. And this is just great marketing for writers if you're thinking about an idea, because if you tell everybody you wrote a book all about everybody in the neighborhood and they might be in it, all show up at your book launch. And there's a character in this book, by the way, that's become really popular, called the Neighborhood Boy. And there's a set of stories about him. He was an 8-year-old kid, 10-year-old kid who come talk to me on my porch. He's very charismatic and reminded me of me and my brothers in the 70s, because he was just never on a phone. He's just free range riding his bike around everywhere. But he came to the book launch and he's suddenly famous. He was offering to sign books for people. he's introducing
good
himself.
For him.
I'm the Neighborhood Boy. Happy to sign your book if you'd like me.
Yeah. Amazing. Take your 15 minutes, Neighborhood Boy. I love that. Tom, you mentioned the joyful parts of this book, and there are so many. Some of the stories about your other daughter, Sarah, made me laugh out loud, like the one about her trying to convince you to buy her a bunny one Christmas. Has she read this book?
She hasn't read this book. I mean, she's worried that some of the stories about, losing her younger sister will make her sad.
Yeah.
She's aware that she's in the book. She'd probably fact check it like crazy. But she's aware she's in the book. And what's amazing is she's going to college in the fall. And a lot of these are stories of her childhood. And I think she'll read it someday. I dedicated my last novel to her that came out in 2019, and I showed it to her, and she's like, "You mean I'm just on the front page and not actually in the book?" But this time she's actually in the book, but she, I think it's probably might be a little too close for her at this point to read it yet.
Yeah. Wow. Well, what an incredible collection of stories. The book is called Notes from the Porch, Tiny True Stories to Make You Feel Better About the World. It is it's by Thomas Christopher Green of Montpelier. Tom, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a real pleasure.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, that is all the time that we have today. Tomorrow, we will be lucky enough to be joined by another Vermont author, Glenn Stout, who wrote a book on the first woman to cross the English Channel. It's now been adapted into a Disney movie. We'll talk to him about the process of taking his book from page to screen and share a number of other stories as well. That's tomorrow on Vermont Edition at noon. Today's show is directed by Jen Jarecki and produced by Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro. Our call screener today was Rick Baer, and our theme music was composed by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch up again soon.